dreary January day here in Wormtown at the Crawl Space Studios. I am Tim, and I'm here with Lance. What's up, Lance?
Not too much. It's certainly dreary outside, rainy, cold. As my father would say, raw. This is raw temperatures, raw conditions, but it is certainly not dreary nestled within the Crawl Space Studios
here. No, it's nice and warm here. So welcome to Crawl Space. It is with great pleasure we get to bring you this conversation that we had a couple of weeks ago with you, me, Greg Overacker, private investigator and bounty hunter and general badass, Greg Overacker, who's been working the Brianna Maitland missing person case for 13 years at this point. And we also have Chloe Cantor, our co-host in the series, on as well.
It was really cool to have Greg and Chloe both here in the studio live with us. And like you said, it turned into a conversation. When you're over Skype or over the phone, it's very interview-like. But when you're in person, you get to feed off of each other's gestures and nuances. And it was really fitting to start the new year by having Greg on for the first of 2018 Brianna Maitland episodes, sort of a recap, sort of a, here we go type episode.
Yeah, a little bit of a reset on where we're at with the case. You get to hear from Greg, who knows the ins and outs of it. And if you're watching the YouTube version, you may see some disembodied legs in one of the camera angles, and that is Greg Overacker's significant other, Becky. So thanks, Becky, for making the trip out to the Crawl Space Studios.
Greg is really a wellspring of stories, and while he does meander a bit at times, it's purposeful, and it's somehow relatable, and always comes back to the main purpose of the original story. So you'll find yourself getting lost, as when I was listening to it, even in person and then the recording, you find yourself getting lost in his stories, and just when you start to think, what does this have to do with what he started with, or what did he start with? It comes full circle, and it's—I don't think he realizes how sort of brilliant a storyteller he is.
Yeah, I agree. He's definitely a great storyteller. So we start to talk about some of the persons of interest in the case during this conversation. So we just want to give you a quick oversight on some of the people that we do mention, some of the people that come up, like Ramon Ryans and Nathaniel Jackson. And if you've seen the Disappeared episode about Brianna Maitland, then you've seen a lot about those two guys specifically, because they sort of pointed at those two guys and said they're the most interesting persons of interest. So we cover them a little bit. We also talk about Jorge Soto, who is also a career criminal. Very scary individuals, if any of these people are involved.
These are individuals that we have brought up in the previous episodes of Crawl Space, either with Chloe or with Greg or with Bruce. All of the people that we mention, Ryan, Soto, even the ones that aren't mentioned but alluded to. And Chloe was invited by Lou Berry, who's an investigator who's worked with Greg and the family, to one of these interviews where she had a first face-to-face interaction with some of these criminal characters who are part of the case.
Yeah, so she describes that a little bit, and we kind of talk about what that's like and specifically what that instance was like and some interesting stories as well.
Yeah, I think everybody's going to enjoy listening to it. We talk about Brianna. We talk about, we get into some conspiracy, like real quick conversations about that. But again, it all comes back to Greg's overall point. One thing that I want to mention before we get to the interview is the nonprofit that we are now on the board of directors.
Yes, very cool. And it comes up in the interview, and it's called Private Investigators for the Missing. And it's quite an honor to be a member of this foundation on the board of directors, along with Bruce Maitland.
The main objective of this nonprofit is to provide resources for families who have been searching for missing loved ones, missing family members. Oftentimes, too often, we get into the circumstances where the police are coming up with nothing and time is elapsing, and families' only resort is to hire a private detective. And Greg speaks about how much private detectives cost with their day rate, with expenses, and no regular person can afford $250 a day plus expenses. And this seems like such a great, it's such a great idea because it's such an obvious idea. This needs to be in existence.
So we're happy to be a part of it, and we talk about it a little bit and in more detail in the conversation. So thank you very much for listening to this episode. Hope you enjoy it. And follow us on Twitter at CrawlSpacePod. Oh, and check out our new podcast coming soon called Empty Frames. Follow us on Twitter at @empty_frames.
It feels pretty natural to go into a quick recap. Brianna went missing in March of 2004. What have we learned in the time that we all got together and started communicating and working on this case? What have we learned in the meantime since we all started sharing this information?
You know, it's odd. The more people you talk to, the less it seems like the less information you get, but at the same time, you're eliminating people. Constantly hearing stories, constantly hearing rumors and following up on them. And I want to talk about Lou Berry, too, who came to work with us. Lou just offered himself up, and fantastic guy, retired police chief. And, you know, we're really happy to have him with us. And he's been really aggressive, kind of put a fire under everybody. And, you know, it's funny, he's going back, very experienced investigator. He's going back and he's talking to people that I talked to years ago, which is a great thing. He's talking to people I never talked to. It's such an odd thing that you talk to all these people and they, A, either lie to you or lie to you unintentionally because they don't know. They're telling you a story that they believe, but it's a lie once you follow up on it. Or, you know, it's all rumors, so it's a vicious circle. He and I have had a lot of discussions of the fact that it's just aggravating. It can drive you crazy. So, and Chloe kind of knows that. She went along and spoke to some people with us. And, you know, it's like trying to pull teeth. And you don't know what to believe sometimes.
So how is Lou going about finding these people that you did and didn't talk to?
You know, it's funny. Lou's retired police chief, like I said. I mean, he was on the force, I think, 35 years. Teaches at, you know, I can't give you his bio. He could do that better than me. I don't want to do it injustice. But he teaches now the academy and stuff like that.
What does he teach?
He teaches, cadets.
Okay.
You know, up-and-coming police officers.
He declined the interview. We would have asked him, but.
I think eventually he will.
Okay.
I hope so.
I think at this point he's just kind of wants to work on it, you know. You know, you meet a guy like that who's been in police work for so long and is now retired, sometimes those guys don't have the skills as far as technology. Well, he does. So he's got the old school and he's got the new stuff. So he finds these people, whether he has to go out and find them on foot or he has to look them up, you know, on some search sites, and he does a great job of it. And interviewed some people that I really, really wanted to talk to. And it's nice to know that I can trust them and I don't have to worry about, oh, gee, should I be there? Do I want to be present to, you know, I get the story from him correctly. You know, he relates it to me correctly, and I don't have to worry about whatever interview he does. I know he's going to be done right. So
it sounds like a welcome relief to have somebody like Lou there with you.
Over the years, you know, we've had a ton of people come in and want to be involved, recently also, and they don't last. I mean, they last anywhere from days to months, and they either just walk away, which is, in my mind, just a horrible thing to do, to, you know, come into the loop with Bruce and then walk away from him. You just can't do that. If you're going to get involved in this thing, you're in or you're out. Or they don't know what they're doing. And, you know, we had one guy that actually lasted a couple hours because we found out who he was. And, no, we don't want you on board, you know.
Good.
Can you tell us that story?
Well, that's, I don't know how much I should say about it, but he was a guy that contacted us recently, and Lou actually found his bio. Well, it was a newspaper article that was put out about him out of Burlington. He's a private investigator. I don't know if he's licensed. I didn't look into that, but you know, they put the people are private investigators in these articles, and you don't know until you check with the state or whatever because they just call themselves that, which is just, I don't understand that.
You are a licensed private investigator.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it would be like you, Lance, walking outside your house and hanging up a sign that says dentist, you know, and working on people's teeth. You know, it's just, you can't do that. The state actually monitors this and licenses people for a reason.
Right, because I brush my teeth 3 times a day and floss, that gives me the right to call myself
therefore
a dentist.
Therefore, you are a dentist. Yeah. I am Asian, therefore I know karate. Yeah. So he actually looked up this article, and I read it, and I don't know if I sent it to you guys. Did you get that? You would remember. This guy touted himself.
You sent a lot of articles.
You told it to us? I don't think you sent this to us.
I hope I brought you a copy. He touted himself as a private investigator, a bounty hunter, and a bunch of other things. In the state of New York, you have to be licensed as a bounty hunter unless you're a private investigator. If you are a private investigator, you're clawed in, then you can perform those duties. He actually stated in the article that they didn't carry firearms, and I am to assume, by the way the article went, that they aren't licensed for a reason to carry firearms. So instead, they carried handgun BB guns, and he actually told how powerful they were. And he made the comment that when we go into a grocery store wearing our outfits, their BDUs or whatever they call them, and with our handguns on our side and stuff, people don't mess with us. And all I could think was, who messes with you when you're in Hannaford's anyway? You know, are you walking through the, the produce aisle and people are jumping you from behind or something?
They really diffused the potential danger.
Yeah.
But right off the bat.
If you're living in such a bad neighborhood that you have to dress up as a fake cop, you need to move. So
what a totally absurd thing to say. They don't mess with me when I go into Hannaford.
Yeah.
I got my gun on my side.
They don't mess with me when I go into the supermarket too, when I have my coat on.
Yeah. You know, you're undercover.
It may or may not have anything to do with the coat. I don't know.
Yeah. So, and he made a lot of other comments and that they carry tasers and all this other stuff. You know, I don't know about there, but you know, where I am, that stuff's illegal. You can't carry that stuff. So if I was a district attorney and I sat down and I read this article, I'd think, this is a public menace. You know, this guy's going to hurt somebody. He actually made the comment of that he could go down to wherever and grab a bunch of warrants from the police station or the courthouse and go and pick all these people up. And he said, well, I wouldn't get paid, but because that's not how that works, but I would be doing a public service. First of all, that's illegal. You can't do that. You can't just, because you know somebody's wanted, you can't just go tackle them and take them to jail and go, ta-da, you know, I'm a superhero. It doesn't work that way. When you work for a bail bondsman and you're considered a bail enforcement agent, bounty hunter, that bail bondsman, because he's a licensed bail bondsman, he's an insurance agent, okay? And he has the right, when you sign that contract, when you go to or get bonded out of jail, you sign that contract, you agree that he can come and arrest you anywhere in the country. Some states differ, but he can break and enter your home. He can search your vehicle. If he feels you're going to flee, if someone comes up and says, hey, Lance is going to take off, he's going down to Florida, he can go and arrest you and take you to jail. No questions asked. They don't care if you did, it's not your court date yet.
And that's something you can do, right?
What they do, the bondsman, when he comes to you and he says, hey, I want you to work for me, he gives you a written power of attorney, okay? That power of attorney passes that power, the power of arrest, over to me so that I can go out and perform on his behalf. And you have to carry that all the time, because if you don't, it's kidnapping.
Right.
You go to prison. And, you know, there's other paperwork you have to carry, too. You have to carry a copy of the bond agreement. Because when you're in North Carolina and you tackle somebody in the street and the police roll up and they're like, what the hell's going on? You know, you don't work for my police department. You show them this document. Look, I have a contract here. He signed in the state of New York. He's under bail bond. And here's my power of attorney. I work for that bail bondsman. And I'm here to arrest him. Okay, you're good. So for this guy to say that he could just go down and grab warrants and just go start tackling people, huge no-no. I mean, it's hugely illegal. End up in jail. So I'm picking through this thing, and every page I'm seeing something that's illegal on it. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, this district attorney, if he ever saw this, he would just freak out. So then we did contact the guy because we didn't know him initially. Come to find out, he doesn't own a car.
That must make the work a little bit more challenging.
Yeah, I would say that would make it difficult. I don't know if he's got himself a 10-speed or what. But, yeah, so there's people like that that come and go. You know, they come in and you check them out. And at the time, we were thinking, geez, you know, we could have him run to the courthouse, get some paperwork for us. We could have him do this. Because for me, it's a drive to go up to Burlington or Vermont, and it costs us money. Which goes into the whole reason that we're starting the foundation.
Yeah, we'd love to get into that.
Yeah, okay, that's a good segue. Yeah. This foundation is something that Bruce Maitland has decided to start, and he's using your resources as well. You want to tell us?
That all started as years ago. I brought it up, and I kind of just wouldn't leave it alone with Bruce. I'm like, you know, consider that for a minute, that, you know, Bruce and Kelly were average folks, and their child goes missing. The police investigation doesn't work like it does on television, so it doesn't wrap up in 90 minutes and everybody's happy, or it's kind of happy. So you have to go out and hire a private investigator. Some of these guys charge $200 an hour plus expenses. You're talking about court paperwork, whatever you have to pay for, gas, hotel rooms. Nobody can afford that, you know. So I said, wouldn't it be a wonderful thing? And as I talked to other people, I had heard that Mark Kloss from the Kloss Kids, Polly Kloss Foundation, he would go around and speak at different law enforcement events. And he actually had brought that up, that he thought it would be a great idea. So I kept bringing it up to Bruce over the years. And finally he said, you know, I'm going to do this. I have the money to do it. I'm going to do it. So he did. He paid an attorney and started the ball rolling. You know, there's paperwork you have to fill out. You have to submit it to the IRS. But you have to have certain things you have to submit with it. And one of them was board of directors and things like that. And I heard that he asked you guys to get involved.
That's correct. And we happily agreed to be involved at whatever level that he would
want. Did he ask you guys to, what roles did he ask you to step into?
He had two treasurer and secretary.
And I was very forceful that I wanted to wear the sexy secretary glasses. So I am the secretary. Nice.
I was very forceful that Tim wore the sexy secretary glasses.
Nice.
So he was fine with that.
Yeah. I mean, are you
excited,
guys?
Excited. Delighted.
Yeah, you guys are actually, you know, very capable of filling those positions, so.
Yeah, all jokes aside, it is something that we're really passionate about. Obviously, we've been doing this for over a couple of years now. Brianna's case is something we want to help as much as we can.
Yeah, he wouldn't just put you on there to fill the role to satisfy the IRS. He knows that you're capable of filling the position, and he's got some pretty incredible people lined up for the positions he had to fill. I that's something better to ask him about. He's more up on it than I am. He just lets me know where it's standing at whatever time I talk to him and how it's coming along and stuff like that. But yeah, it started out as, and he just said, look, you know, you're going to be my full-time guy. That means that I'm going to be on the road probably 4 or 5 days a week, every week.
Explain to us what the objective of the foundation is.
It's to provide private investigators to families of missing people, not just missing children. So they don't have to pay for anything, and it's supplied for them. If you look at these, I mean, you can look on the internet and find missing persons in your area from either recently or years ago. I mean, it's not hard to do, and there's just hundreds and hundreds and no lack of the need for it. But who can afford it? I mean, you'd have to be wealthy.
And usually these the need for it is when it's getting to the point where it's becoming a cold case and the police have lowered it on their priority list.
Yeah.
So the families are in need of a private investigator. They're in need of some sort of alternative investigation.
You know, and I don't ever blame the police for that. And I don't think it's that it's fallen on their priority list either. It's just that they're the police and there's a constant need on them. They're always pulled away.
Yeah.
It's difficult for them and they have a budget. And they only have so many officers, and only so many officers trained to do so many things. And, the officers, the state police that investigate Brianna's case are really good. But they have other things they need to do. They'll get to what we give them. We hand them something, they're happy to have it, and they go out and they work it. But, you know, if they're working on a particular shooting or something at the time, or right now there's an officer involved shooting up in Vermont that's being worked on pretty heavily, but they'll get to it and they will work on it. And I would never step in. I would never do that if a family called right away and said, we want your, you know, this just happened. I'd say, you know, you need to let the police handle this. That's their job.
Is the goal to have the foundation up and running and functional by in 2018?
Yeah, I'm cool. Hoping so.
Cool.
Absolutely hoping so.
Now, obviously, just in this conversation already, we can kind of hear that things are always moving. Things are always happening in this case behind the scenes. If we're not talking about it, it doesn't mean that stuff isn't going on. Now, Greg and Chloe and Lou, you guys went up to Vermont a month or and a half ago or 2 months ago or something like that, had some interviews. Can you guys give us any update on how that went or anything you can say?
Well, let's not mention any names. But Chloe will attest to the fact, is that the first time you've ever done something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. She'll attest to the fact that you don't know what you're walking into. I did because I'd spoken to this person before. But and I couldn't wait to see the look on your face, actually. So I went back to the address that I'd spoken to this person, cold knocked on the door, asked if this was possible, that Lou and Chloe could come in and sit down and talk with her. And they did. And it was bizarre, wouldn't you say?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
You're talking to people that live a lot differently probably than most, and maybe have had a hard life and have witnessed things that maybe you haven't. And, you know, rough kind of people, at least from my standpoint. And I deal with a lot of those people. I see it all the time. You know, we talked about, I told you before, work when I was young and I went out and started working on the road. You realize how bad places really are and the bad people are actually out there. And so it's a large population. You go into a major city, and unfortunately, like I told you, I would always have to go to the bad part of town and deal with people who are disadvantaged and underprivileged and maybe uneducated and for whatever reason they're in their situation. But yeah, and Chloe did well.
Yeah, so, I want to hear what it was like for Chloe.
Yeah, and if you could give us just a little bit of background as to who you were speaking with without giving away too much. You know, I don't want anything to affect the investigation. Is this a suspect, someone with information, and maybe a quick, like, detail of the location?
Outside of Burlington, they gave information years ago that I thought was really important. I still do. I still think there's some truth to it. It's kind of difficult to explain. And when you're dealing with somebody like that, it's difficult because they're not very considered trustworthy. You know, there's a difference in people you can put on a stand in front of a jury and people that you want to take information from and take the good from the bad and follow up on it. You're going to follow up on it anyway. But I really believed what she had to say. The problem is that she's just not, I don't know how to put this and be kind. She was difficult. I don't know. Can you explain that, Chloe? You had to talk to her.
Yeah. Like you said, you can kind of tell once you start to talk to someone that they've had a pretty hard life and that they've seen and experienced a lot of things that have made things not easy for them.
Yeah.
And seeing someone on the other end of that is difficult. You know, you say that just in your job and dealings with people, you've seen a lot of that in a different way. I do, too, just working at a psychiatric hospital. And it's an odd feeling. And yeah. And at the same time, like, you feel sorry for them, but you also have to take into account some of their limitations, especially when you're interviewing them and thinking about facts. You know, first of all, we have the almost 14-year gap, and every human is prone to error in terms of memory, especially when it's been that long. But we also have people that maybe abuse substances, maybe have some mental health issues.
Yeah.
Other reasons outside of just time that perhaps we're not getting the truth. And they could be lying, too. So we have to really be observant there.
This particular person had everything you just spoke of. Yeah.
And we, you know, so that interview I had with Lou and with Greg afterward, Lou and I proceeded to have two other interviews. And those subjects also were of pretty similar circumstances.
Yeah, you know, that's a big thing, too. And I talked to a lot of friends of mine that are corrections officers. And one of the conversations that came up recently is, how many people do you think, and the stories this guy tells me, I could never do that for a living. And I thought about it when I was young. But how many of those people, the percentage-wise, are mentally ill or have a mental health issue? And I don't remember the percentage. the stories he can tell you, it's horrible that in this country we throw people in jail instead of treating them for their mental illness and getting them help. That's why these people come out of jail and there's a problem again. But yeah, when you sit there and talk with this particular person, and actually the one I was interested in was an interview you did without me that you did with Lou, and when I heard what you had to say about it, because it was somebody that I'd wanted to talk to for a long time. But yeah, he has a mental health issue, and it showed just in his appearance, didn't it?
Yeah, you can really just pick it up on the way that someone speaks and their affect, and also you see a lot in eye contact or lack thereof.
Yeah.
You know, this guy couldn't even look at us.
A little disheveled when he saw him?
Yes. Yeah.
Was this person in particular, do you think that person was lying to you intentionally, or it's just part of maybe their mental illness
that they're untrustworthy? It's hard to say. You know, he did set a boundary early on in the interview that he did not want to talk about drugs. And that was a line that he had set, and we wanted to respect that because we didn't want to scare him away or make him not want to talk to us anymore.
And before you say anything else, he brought up drugs later, didn't he?
Yep.
Yeah, that always happens. Hey, I don't want to talk about this, but, and they'll bring it up.
You don't want to talk about drugs in the sense of the drug connection to Brianna, or just
at all,
just in a general sense.
He seemed concerned about getting in trouble himself, like that he didn't want to bring up any kind of, because this person does have a criminal background and has served time during in crimes involving drugs and I believe burglary and robbery. This is someone that probably doesn't want to needlessly incriminate himself.
Oddly, it's a weird thing to understand, too, is that the four of us can sit here and talk. You have a general assumption of what you can get in trouble for and what you can't. Well, most people do. This person would assume that you could arrest him if he says, well, I did drugs. I had a bunch of drugs on me 20 years ago or 10 years ago, and I sold them to people. They think they can be arrested for that. Listen, you can't. There's only a couple of things you can get arrested for. You can get arrested for possession or sale. You know, I'm not even quite sure if you can get arrested for intoxication. I mean, it'd have to be some kind of issue to bring that to the forefront that they would. But those are the two things you can get busted with. No one's going to go back and say, hey, 10 years ago you did this or that.
Yeah.
Unless you're flying plane loads into the country. Mm-hmm. It's a little different than you're importing. But
so I think that there's a poor understanding of what could happen to him, like poor insight there. But at the same time, what made me think that he was being untruthful was he claimed to really know nothing and to have never met Brianna herself when other accounts say otherwise. So that's odd. But after talking to other people, you kind of get a different story, like that perhaps he was kind of just being used by the people that he was surrounding with and he really wasn't like in that inner circle, even though it appeared that he could have been. Even though he was surrounded by these people, he was kind of on the outskirts and wasn't let in on their secrets.
You know, I was happy that you went up there with Lou and sat with him, and I would have gone with him if you weren't around. I used to do all this stuff on my own, which was a really bad idea. But, you know, to go in, he doesn't know what to expect. He doesn't know who this person is or what he's going to do, and the mental illness that's involved and all that stuff. So you don't want him to be alone and stuff like that.
Right. I was actually going to ask, like, was that a scary experience for you? And obviously, Lou is a former law enforcement. He's probably packing heat, right?
I don't know if he was that day.
I don't know either. I don't know.
Well, there's certain carry permit laws.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I'm sure whatever he did, it was following the law.
Vermont has a very bizarro law where if I go into Vermont as a citizen, I can carry my firearm. And there's no problem with it. But if I go in there as a private investigator, I have to have a permit to carry my firearm. Why would an average citizen be allowed to just carry their firearm in from New York State, but not a professional?
That seems backwards for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, so
I'm not sure if he was, but you know, he and I communicate pretty regularly, and we drove up to Burlington together actually. And I feel very comfortable with him. And
as long as he's around.
And
the fact that there's two of you there, it lets the person know, you know, there's a connection here. There's something.
Yeah.
You know, he can't just get you in a room get you cornered. Well, this particular person, the reason I mentioned that is years ago, I had spoke to a person that pointed a finger at him, the person that Chloe and Lou talked to. And what this guy said was, listen, I did hundreds of robberies burglaries with this guy. So if someone's hardcore enough that they've done hundreds of burglaries, not four. You know, you have to think about that. And the guy also said, when I was interviewing this particular person, I was sitting in his kitchen up on the Canadian border, and he said, we used to specifically target elderly women because we knew if they left the house is empty, and when they get home, we'll watch for them. We could just go out the back door or whatever we have to do. Very close to where we were sitting talking, I knew, and as he was talking to me, all I could think of was this, the fact that I knew this. An elderly woman had been found about 100 yards from her house. Someone had marched her out into the woods behind her house and killed her. And all I could think of was, I wonder if these two guys found, you know, were in her house and she came home, or they thought she was gone and they went in the house and she spotted them and they took her out in the woods.
The impression that he made on me was, I mean, he had poor posture. He would not look at Lou or me. He basically kept his head down, like the worst eye contact I've ever experienced in a long-term conversation. Sheepish, slightly disheveled, like you said, and his affect and his voice were just very blunted and flat. Like there wasn't a lot of emotion there. One of the more interesting things that he mentioned was he mentioned visits in psychiatric hospitals and that, quote, they think I'm schizophrenic. And, you know, just coming from my position, I was trying to, you know, learn more and see if maybe there are things that he needs help with that aren't being addressed. But he was extremely guarded about that. So it's interesting that he's maybe received such a diagnosis.
What did you ask him?
I said, you know, why do you think they thought you were schizophrenic? You know, what symptoms are you having? And he really didn't want to talk about it. Yeah.
So what brought you to, Lou contacted the two of you and said that he had scheduled these interviews?
That's how he reached out to me. He said that he had three interviews scheduled up in northern Vermont and wanted to know if I wanted to come along.
The reason for that is that you don't want to be alone with a female.
Sure.
You want a female with you.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
The first thing that they're going to do is say, he touched me.
Right.
Yeah.
What was it that brought Lou to say, well, we need to go talk to these people again?
Oh, it's just information I had. It was a good thing for him to go back. He's going to do that. He's a professional. He's going to go back and talk to everybody I talked to. And then he reached out to Moore. And he'll call me up and he'll say, hey, did you talk to this person? Yes. Well, okay, what did they say? Okay, I'm going to go talk to him. Or he'll say, did you? And I'll say, no. And he'll say, but I always wanted to. And then he'll go and he'll talk.
And he'll do it. Yeah. No, whenever something new comes up that, or at least new to me, not to him, but, and we discuss it, it's either I already tracked them down and talked to them, or they're on my list and we're going to have an interview soon. So he's just extremely diligent.
I mean, he's experienced enough and seasoned enough that he knows who he can go talk to alone, kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He'll do jail interviews alone, stuff like that if he needs to. But number one rule, don't talk to a woman alone.
Something I keep kind of coming back to and trying to kind of wrap my head around the theories that are out there about this and that we've talked about on this show. And it seems like now that we're kind of getting a lot deeper, actually, we've been covering Brianna's case for almost a year now. Now that we're getting deeper, you can kind of see these theories like branch out. And I'm not talking about suicide, murder, or running away. I'm talking about all theories in the murder, under the murder umbrella. This Ramon Ryan's branch is one.
Mm-hmm.
What Katie and Megan talked on this show about is sort of another, which I guess you may not consider murder if that has any truth to it. And then there's one or two other kind of routes that we're learning about more in detail lately. How relevant do you think these are, and what do you, how much stock do you put in these?
That was really touted. I mean, I think everybody that knows about this case, well, you know, that area of Vermont has watched the Disappeared show. So that show, and this is another thing about how television can really twist things, or at least an hour-long show, they're trying to hit the highlights and show you, to give you an idea, because you wouldn't know what the hell was going on. But they went with the whole Ramon Ryan's Nathaniel Jackson scenario. So that's what you walked away from. You know, friends of mine that watched it, I said, hey, you watch this show, I was going to be on it. You know, they come around, they go, oh, so what do you think of these guys? What do you think of these guys? Well, there's a huge other picture out there. So that's a hard thing to talk about. But other than that, I wasn't really sure what you were trying to ask.
I guess just like, you know, and kind of without saying certain names, probably like, yeah. I guess like what theories, you know, where are you guys angling at this point? Like where are you thinking?
That's hard to say. And, you know, Lance and I talked about this real briefly. We should talk about it more. What percentage of the population of people that you know have really good critical thinking skills that can really look at something objectively and give you a straight answer?
It's pretty low.
Yeah, it's really low.
And actually the ones that can are the ones that, you know, they're probably in this room and then, you know, people I'm going to go see after this.
Look,
you know, just
this,
people I keep close to me.
This is something that angers you, doesn't it? It should.
Well, I say that a lot. Like that, the critical thinking part, and also just not being aware of where, like just the unawareness that most people have.
Yeah.
Just sort of absent-mindedness and unawareness that people have.
So if you look at it from a critical thinking point,
yeah,
and I think this will answer your question, I'm not sure. What do we know as fact? As absolute fact, it's not much. You know where she left. You know where she ended up. You know the position of the car and a basic time frame and stuff like that. Once you get further than that, you really don't know much. So one beneficial thing to something like this, to your podcast, is that people get on there and they have opinions. And I like to think of it as brainstorming. I don't really like when I hear people saying, I know what happened, or if you knew what happened, we wouldn't be here. But I like the brainstorming part of it, because I read those comments to see if there's anything that I didn't think of or what other people think and roll it through my head. Tim told me early on, don't take offense to the comments, because not everybody's nice and not even everybody's going to agree with you, and some people are just assholes. So
I would never say that about our listeners.
You know, there are people that occasionally come on and just say something that just doesn't, you know, just isn't decent. But it's when you think of it critically or with some critical thinking skills, we don't know much. And the problem is that we're chasing after going to talk to people looking for evidence instead of having evidence and going looking for people. It's a backwards way of doing things, and which is the whole problem.
And it's so tempting to look at it. God, it's so tempting to look at it and say, you know, this is what happened and this is what happened.
Yeah.
And
oh,
that's
absolutely
where you're talking about with that, the critical thinking. That's where that has to come in, because like
if you sat down and you took a pen
you don't
and you said,
have facts.
I'm going to write down everything that I know is an absolute fact. You wouldn't get far.
You certainly wouldn't run out of ink.
Yeah. It's a real basic scenario, and then you start hearing these stories, and some of which you have to chase after them hard because they seem like they have some truth to them. But, you know, you get into that critical thinking thing, it's a really difficult conversation to have. And, you can go into a room of 100 people and say, how many people believe in psychics? And 80 of them will raise their hand. I go, are you kidding me? So you people all think that there's magic people in the world, that everybody can predict the future. And I hate to say it to people, but those are the people that will walk into a room, smile at somebody across the table, the person will lie to them, steal from them, and they thank them. That was really horrible that they put that in this show. And I knew they did that, the Oxygen show about Maura Murray. I know they did that for sensationalism or whatever.
They did that because there are 80 people out of 100 who want to see a psychic.
Yeah, I mean, we actually talked about this a lot, that specific thing, the Evie Pomporis, the psychic, being in episode 6 of Oxygen's 6-part series called The Disappearance of Maura Murray. And people will say, oh, they did that for ratings. It's like, well, no, they didn't fucking do it for ratings, because you're talking about episode 6. So the ratings are over.
Oh, they're already
What they did it for, what wasn't to solve the case, it was to get people like talking about it like we're doing right now.
Oh, I see.
Some people like hate psychics and some people love psychics. Yeah. And either way, they're going to argue about it, and someone's going to see those comments and that argument and they're going to say, well, I got to watch me that show.
It just absolutely, and we talked about this. I actually recommended that, and you had already seen it, that documentary about the amazing Randy.
Yes.
If you haven't seen it, it's called An Honest Liar. He was a magician. When his career was kind of over, he was just getting old. He didn't want to do that particular anymore. He took it upon himself to prove that these people are a fraud. And if you watch it and you listen to what he has to say, you will know people, and people, they will agree with you. They'll go, but they'll still go see one. They'll still believe him. it's something in the human psyche that makes them do it. But just so you know, if you do that, if you're willing to go sit across from a psychic and pay them money, you're getting robbed and you're thanking them for it because no one is mad. People are not magic. That's what it comes down to. Okay? If those people were all magic, they'd all be living in a big castle with all the booze and all the money and running the world. And then you go into the conspiracy people.
Oh, yeah. Please tell us your feelings on that, on conspiracies.
I just don't know how do people fall into this crap that people are spraying the country with something that's going to make everybody sick. First of all, the logistics, it would never work. I can debunk this with a few internet searches in 10 minutes. If you know
but
how
then there are people out there that can
debunk it
yeah.
with an internet
search.
Well,
you know, that's kind of like you're talking to a Scientologist or a person that's real religious. They have these thought-stopping arguments where if you say something, you know, to somebody who's real religious, they just say, you know, the Lord will provide. Okay, am I not supposed to ask how this is going to happen? I'm just supposed to trust that that's going to happen. So I go sit on the corner and just wait around. Somehow money's going to show up. I don't know.
Thoughts and prayers.
Yeah. It's like a thought-stopping argument. You know, the other day I was reading something about a conspiracy. It was a debunking thing. And, of course, it's all of a sudden rabid in the comments. And this guy goes on in detail. I mean, and I'm thinking, I didn't know this stuff. This is pretty interesting. And one of the points, huge points he made, is no one has any footage of any of these hijackers in an airport. None. And he went on really on about it. And he was a really articulate guy. And I read it, and I thought, that's pretty interesting. Picked up my phone, did a Google search or a YouTube search. There's 100 videos there. Guys walking through the airport. That's them. You know, we know what they did. We know they went down a train to fly and that they told the guy, we don't care how we land. You know, it's the United States.
You know what you were told.
See, that's the conspiracy. Oh, you know what you were told. That's what they want you to believe. Let me tell you something. If you think that the government can pull off an inside job of 9/11 is an inside job. The government can't even get health care right. How are they going to figure this? You really think they're all going to keep them? So, you know what? The four of us could have a secret in this room. You assholes would go tell somebody as soon as we walk out the door. You know, there's no way thousands of politicians kept this shit secret. One guy would get fired. He'd go out the back door and go, they blew up those buildings. It just doesn't work that way. But, yeah, if your mind is bent to believe something no matter what, you're going to go down and pay somebody $100 to read your palm. They're going to tell you, oh, my God, your father's dead. But he loves you, and, you know, he wants you to do well in life, and you're going to walk out with a big smile on your face. The one that was really horrible was, and I can't think of her name off the top of my head now, she had that real raspy voice. She was a psychic. She was just on Montel all the time.
Sylvia Brown.
If you look at Sylvia statistically, 99.9% of the time, she was wrong. People have done it. People like James Randi actually went through and figured out how often she was wrong. But nobody looks at the mishits, the wrongs. They always look at the rights. Oh, she got that right. Well, she just asked you 1,000 questions till she got it right. And yes, everyone eventually has someone named Harold in their family. If they say a name, you know, somebody in the audience is going to stand up and say, yes, I know a Robert or whatever. Everybody knows a Bob. But I watched a show with her. And a lady was crying. She stood up in the audience and she was crying. And she said, I just want to know what happened to my son. And she said, he drowned. I'm sorry, he drowned. And the lady's crying her eyes out. I mean, broke her heart. How do you do that to someone? And on top of it, they end up asking her, well, what was the deal with your son? She said, he was in one of the 9/11 buildings. So I'm pretty sure there wasn't a river there. He didn't drown. She doesn't know what the fuck she's talking about. And she's evil, and she's taking people's money. People are sending her money left and right. She's got a $4 a minute line that you can call. And she's just making shit up. And to tell a mother whose child died in 9/11 that you don't fucking know how her son died. You were nowhere near there, you know. So, I don't know. I just think the whole thing's evil. Oh, and by the way, did I tell you, end up telling you how Marilyn Monroe died?
No.
Oh, and they start going on and on with these conversations. Oh, this is a big, long story, and JFK had something to do with it. And they shoved barbiturates up her ass so that she would OD, but no one
would
detect
it. I heard
it
was under her toenail. They injected it under her toenail because the first person that came in said there was no pill bottle, but then when they came back in later, there was a pill bottle.
Oh, see.
Someone planted it.
It's always something tricky like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why is it that humans can't believe, people can't believe that an actress overdosed because she mixed barbiturates with alcohol. You can't wrap your head around that. So the answer to that is Whitney Houston, Heath Ledger, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Amy Winehouse, Anna Nicole Smith, Chris Farley, River Phoenix, John Belushi. Go on and on. I mean, you could just name hundreds of Jim Morrison, Janis Joplin.
None of those were having an affair with the president of the United States, though.
That's what my brother said too when I told him that. He goes, you can go on and on. Margot Hemingway, who wrote In Cold Blood? What was his name?
Truman Capote.
Truman Capote. Elvis Presley, the biggest celebrity that ever lived. You know, no one can believe that he's dead. He's dead, dude. Let it go. He died.
But Kurt Cobain didn't kill himself.
Oh, no. He didn't do drugs either. But people, for some reason, you know, people get that fascination. Oh, Marilyn Monroe. People can't believe that Lee Harvey Oswald shot Kennedy. He was a marksman. He had every opportunity to do it, and he shot him. He's dead. By the way, you talk about drugs and, you know, people can't believe that people died and this and that and the other thing. You have to understand, last year in this country, I looked up the statistics. Last year it was in this country, 60,600 and something people died of a drug overdose. That's the size of the city of Utica near where I live. That's literally like an entire city dying in a year. And that's pretty mind-boggling for me because I'm familiar with the city. But it's just not an unusual thing, unless you're Marilyn Monroe.
Is there anything that we can talk about to bring it back to Brianna before we wrap it up?
Did you find that, you know, just talking about the psychics, did you find that you received a lot of information from psychics about what's happened and you know,
I had to talk to one time for hours.
I like
that
how you said
terrible.
Like
that sounds awful.
After I hung up, I stuck a fork in my eye.
Yeah.
I was asked to talk to her. She lived in like Ohio. And so I said I would. I got on the phone with her and I was sitting at my desk with my feet up, drink next to me. I knew it was going to be a long ride. Had my pen, had my notepad. And she told me, by the time I got done, the list of stuff that she told me, and a lot of the conversation, most of the conversation actually, she wasn't talking to me. It was her husband. And he said, she's sitting on the floor. This exhausts her. And I could hear her mumbling and stuff. And he would say, she's next to a tree. It's near water. I'm like, that's Vermont, you know. What do you want me to tell you? You know, there's water and trees everywhere in Vermont, even in the cities. And she went on and on. And then she got really gruesome, and she said things about them sexually assaulting her and using sticks. And these people are shameless. And so I said, well, you know, where are you people again? She's like, oh, we're in Ohio. He says, she is like a beacon in the night, and these souls come to her. They see the beacon, they come to her. And they speak to her. She was actually saying she was speaking to Brianna.
And Brianna didn't tell her who to arrest?
No. It's because they can't tell. No psychic can ever tell you that. They can't. Mm. You know, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, that's not how it works, guys.
Listen, who killed who so-and-so? And they went, Tim. That's it. That's the guy. You don't have to. No, they don't. They beat around the bush and they tell you it's this. And you're going to find a water bottle on the ground next to him and all this. It's just bullshit. It's all bullshit. At most aggravating conversation I ever had, I called Bruce the next day. I said, never again. I'm not doing that again.
Yeah.
And Bruce doesn't want anything to do with those people.
Mm-mm.
Nothing. Yeah. Did he mention that to you?
That's just the overall impression I get. Yeah. If he didn't directly say it, when we met with him, his whole thing, he's very rational. He doesn't get his hopes up needlessly, probably because he's gotten his hopes up the most out of anyone.
Yeah.
But yeah, because of that, because of how realistic he is and just grounded, I can't see him being interested in a psychic.
Now, how far are we off to being comfortable with, you know, speaking candidly about people involved with this? Because I know we always dance around names and you know, we have to bleep out certain names. How comfortable are we? At what point would you say, I'm going to start naming these guys publicly?
You can't now unless they're in the public realm. And I mean, unless they've been brought in, Disappeared wouldn't have put Ryan's and Jackson's names on there if they weren't already named in other articles and stuff like that. Hank Alberelli put out two articles, one in 2006, one in 2007. They were the templates still to this day for the basics. Fantastic articles. Hank's a wonderful guy. Did a great job. He lived in the area at the time. The Maitlands were very thankful of the work he did, and rightfully so, because he did such a great job. And to this day, he's still in touch with people in Vermont. He doesn't live there anymore. He lives in between Florida and London. But they're so full of detail. And the other thing is that that affidavit that came from Debbie Gorton, none of that ever would have come up. I think I would have found it in a really roundabout way eventually, actually. But he went right to that. I mean, he followed Ryan's down to Burlington, the death of Ligia Collins, if you know the story. And then he and I found the affidavit, and that came out in the second article, which, you know, we talked about that too, that affidavit, and it was brought up that some people commented on it, an organization commented on it, and they said, you know, this is all bullshit, and we don't believe it and all that crap. Well, that'll show you, first of all, the idiocy of that particular group. They don't know what they're doing. They just don't know what they're doing.
Which particular group?
You know, I don't want to harass them anymore. Well, they get defensive, and I think it's just better left alone.
In a roundabout way, you're talking about a group of people that...
Yeah, they have a group out there that does some work, and they profess to be investigators, and they're just not.
Okay.
They're just not. And once again, they're going to deny the fact that it's illegal to do, or... illegal, but yeah, it is illegal to go out there and profess that you're something that you're not, but they do, and it is legal, and it's, you know, it'll catch up to them at some point. It may not catch up to them, you know, and people say, well, it must not be, I'm not in trouble. Well, just because you rob banks and you get away with it for years and then all of a sudden you get caught, you know, it doesn't, you know, when you get caught, it'll come up.
Back to the names and what we can and cannot say, I just want to make sure I'm understanding. So names like Ramon Ryans, Nathaniel Jackson, they're already in the public domain. So legally, those are names we can say. But the group of people that we've been talking about that we haven't been saying their names, those names have not been introduced, and thus legally we cannot.
I don't know about that. I wouldn't want to be the one to say someone's name and bring them into something like this to be the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really up to us. And the problem is that there are these sort of avenues that are developing, and not all of them can be guilty.
Just because some of these people are not the brightest and they talked rumors and stuff and they may believe what they say is true, is no reason to bring them out in the public eye. As far as Jackson and Ryans go, I don't care. They're shitbags. I don't care what we say about them. Fuck them. And if they come looking for me, that's fine. I don't have to go looking for them.
So I guess this is kind of what I was talking about a little bit earlier, right? So there's this avenue of an accidental overdose. There's this avenue of Ramon Ryans, Jackson, and potentially Brianna having been in Burlington after she went missing. And then there's the Joker side of this. And again, they can't all be true. So these are three separate potential outcomes. So I guess what I'm wondering is what are you guys leaning towards? Or Greg, I mean, you're obviously...
In the meantime, Greg has just pulled from his enormous folder a list of what looks like 7 points or 6 points.
Okay, yeah, let's read this. It says, yeah. Ultimate possible outcomes. One is death due to non-acquaintance abduction. I think that one's, obviously you can't strike anything because, as you say, we don't know.
You know, that's the weird thing
one.
About the Mora case, about yeah. when you discuss Mora and everybody says, well, the two aren't related. Well, yeah, you know, you play the numbers and that's what, you know, good people are going to do when they look at this. But the fact of the matter is you don't know.
Right.
Nobody fucking knows. And everybody says, well, I do know, I don't know.
But Brianna's case is a lot less likely to be random, I would say, don't you think? Just on the surface?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
But if both were non-acquaintance, then it's possible that it could have been the same stranger between
sure.
the two of them.
Just the fact that we don't know and we don't have any answers, we just don't remove it because of that. We just...
Sure. Number two on here, living due to non-acquaintance abduction. Number three, death due to acquaintance abduction. Living due to acquaintance abduction. Six, living due to voluntary disappearance. Seven, death due to drug overdose.
This is an example of critical thinking based on your investigation and not leading any sort of speculation out there with each one of these. Yeah, you can speculate on these, but these are the logical scenarios, the logical solutions based on information.
Yeah.
Okay, so we know... We know that that's the list. We can lean towards certain things on that. And then whatever you decide based on that is kind of the question I was asking, I guess, right?
Yeah, if you look at Joker, I mean, and that's another name you can throw up there because everybody knows it, and it was in Hank's articles and stuff like that,
right.
So it doesn't matter if we talk about it. He knew her in passing. We don't know how well, but we knew that they had spoken briefly, so he knew who she was. He claimed many times to have caused her death. He claimed in jail that he did. Police talked to him about it. He said it was just to scare people and stuff like that. But we just don't know. And that's another thing we've been following up on. But and I understand, I think Lou told me that he's out now. He's actually out on the streets. Dangerous, dangerous guy.
He was, I think, known by other people to kind of be like a violent shakedown right. kind of guy. If yeah. someone owed him money, he was on them. And amongst many other things,
stories.
I'll put you in a shit pit like Breonna Maitland.
Yep.
Threats like that.
One guy he owed money, one guy had access to his money when he went to jail. And he took the money and he bought some drugs and sold it and actually made more money. And when he came out of jail, he said, hey, I took your money, but I made you even more. And here it is. He took a wrench and hit the guy over the head for touching his money. And I mean, you know, I kind of say that casually, but, you know, the guy turned around. He took a wrench and bashed him over the back of the head.
Did he kill the guy?
No, but he messed him up pretty bad.
At first, we thought that he was in prison at the time of Breonna's disappearance, but wasn't he released the day before?
Yeah, come to find out, he was out for a day or two, and, you know, the police kept saying, this is a rough thing, too. They told me, they said, you know, I would have known if he was in town kind of thing, which is bullshit. You don't know if the guy comes out and breezes into town. I mean, they would know eventually if he was hanging around. The cops are going to spot him. They all knew him. You know, word would get around. I used to do, when I worked in Utica 5 days a week, 5 nights a week, I knew who was around. I knew who was in and out, you know, but it would take a while. You'd eventually bump into a friend and they'd say, oh, so-and-so's out, or you'd see him on the street. That's all. But he said, I would have known. No, you wouldn't have.
I was going to bring that up, actually, because that was in some of the notes that Greg emailed us a week or two ago about Joker having been released somewhere around 24 hours before Breonna went missing. Like, what the hell? If this guy was involved, though, he's got 24 hours and he wraps himself up in this.
It happens all the time.
But really?
What do you
happens,
need?
Especially with the guy that's violent. Yeah. He, you know, if he gets out and he goes, I need money. You know, this guy doesn't have a support system like you and I, where we go to our family and your brother goes, left. Hey, stay at my house.
But know? There were checks left on her.
He doesn't have any access. He doesn't know how to cash a check.
Only she can cash her own paychecks,
but
right?
But he would have taken them, though.
He wouldn't know what to do with them.
Yeah, but he still would have taken them.
And it's possible that in the struggle, whatever happened, it was fast. Her headlights were left on. It's possible that he didn't grab that with him. He didn't see them. But I also was under the impression that you really can't cash the checks if you're not that person, if you can't cash
his
paycheck.
This guy's just a thug. Everybody you talk to, the first thing they tell you is he's got no conscience. He doesn't care. He doesn't care if he hurt you and turn around eating a sandwich. But, and we don't know. The thought was just maybe that he gets out of jail and he goes, what am I going to do now? He's standing there on the street going, where do I go?
Right.
Well, people up in Montgomery owe me money. That's where I'm going.
Right.
You know, and he had some friends. He had some connections and stuff with people he sold drugs with and stuff like that. Whether it had anything to do with her, I don't know. Maybe, you know, she did. Maybe before he went into jail, she owed him money and he went into jail. He come back out and he's ready to meet. We don't know. I mean, we have no idea. What we do know for a fact is that he was telling people that he killed her. And he told actually where he buried her. And he did it on multiple occasions. And, you know, he would make comments, too. There was information that came out of jail. He would make comments where he would say he would come back into his cell and shoot his mouth off. And he'd say, I'm never fucking telling them where I put her. You know, comments that would make you think that he did know something. And why is he going to say that when he gets back to his cell? Unless he wants to impress the guy or whatever. Pretty bad dude. And it starts really early on in his life. I mean, it's – he actually, if the story is true, in one of his court cases, his attorney was arguing on his behalf, mitigating circumstances. He was talking about when he lived in Puerto Rico as a child, he watched a group of men show up at his house and drag his mother out to the street and shoot her in the head, walk away, get in the car and leave. He sat there and watched the whole thing. You know, it's just a rough life.
This is a person who's predisposed to violence and violent behavior and sort of a product of his environment, right?
Yeah.
and he gets out of jail. How long was he in jail for?
Oh, geez. Collectively, I don't even know.
I mean, he'd been in and out of jail, too, right?
Yeah, all the time.
So just... I don't know what the I've never been to jail, so I don't know what the mental breakdown is when you are in jail and you get used to being incarcerated, and then you come out and you say, I don't know what to do, and what I do know is crime. And then, like you said, I know people up in Montgomery who owe me money. I could probably use some money right now. And the paychecks is interesting, but someone like that is looking for cash.
It's just a piece of paper to him, probably.
Yeah, and he probably looked at it. I mean, if he even saw it.
People in extremely bad neighborhoods, extreme poverty, or people like him who are just thugs, they have no concept of a bank. That means nothing to them. They have their own usury system, you know? And they don't think, well, geez, I should go to school and I should get a job. Or maybe I'd go to my friends and he'll give me a job doing this or that. No, the first thing they think is, I'm going to rob somebody. Or what can I find on the street to sell at a pawn shop or something? And that was this guy's mindset. He was just a thug.
So, Soto, if you're listening, Wormtown, the Crawl Space Studios in Wormtown are out of Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Yep, Wormtown, New Mexico. It's hot here. Hot here in New Mexico.
When a person goes missing, their loved ones often find themselves overcome with worry and grief. Bruce Maitland started the 501c3 nonprofit organization Private Investigations for the Missing because he knows this feeling all too well.
When Bruce's daughter Brianna disappeared in March 2004, he was surrounded by licensed private investigators dedicated to finding her. Now his mission is to provide dedicated private investigators at no cost to other families of the missing, desperate for answers but without the financial means.
Private Investigations for the Missing needs your help. To read the mission statement, make a donation, and keep up with our blog, visit us at investigationsforthemissing.org and follow us at PI for the Missing on Twitter and Facebook and Investigations for the Missing on Instagram.
Because forever is too long to wait.